Welcome to the 10th episode of the Ikiri Podcast Season 2. In this episode, we have with us Cara Marie Piazza, a natural dyer and artisan working in New York City. She creates one-of-a-kind textiles using natural elements such as botanicals, plant material, minerals, non-toxic metals, and food waste. Cara curates unique experiences merging healing, color, and art. In this episode, we speak with her about her creative thought process and what nature and its colors mean to her as a natural dyer and artist. We also speak with her about her art form and her signature style, healing with nature, the aspect of spirituality in her work, personal life, and more. This conversation was so engaging and thoughtful and fun, and we're so excited for you to tune in. I'm excited because it's going to be so interesting to understand how you create as an artist living in New York City. And generally, you kind of, you know, the stereotype is, I mean, especially with natural dyeing and things like that, we see a lot from India, and I'm from India and we live in India and we have all of this, but it's just like that perspective is going to be so fresh and unique. And I'm hoping we get into all of that in the conversation. But let's see where it takes us. I do have some amount of a structure to the conversation, but feel free to kind of go into as much detail as you want with whichever aspect of it. It's flexible.
Well, I think it's funny that you like bring that up first, because I think that that's actually such a funny, juxtaposition of my life. I think like most people, when they think of a natural dyer, or at least like they assume what my background is, they at least think that I'm grew up in a grassy knoll, like in the middle. Like surrounded by nature and like all of this stuff. And like, it's completely the opposite of that. Like I grew up in a tiny apartment in the middle of Manhattan, like with cement sidewalks as parks. Do you know what I mean? So I think that it was actually that, I think it was like the fact that I didn't have that much nature around me that made me seek it so much more. And it was like that desire to kind of, you know, and like, I hate this term, but it was like, you know, you're a little kid, you're playing with like dried leaves and potions and you like magic and fantasy. It was just like I joke that the pathway found me and I didn't really have a choice in it. And like, once it did, I was just hooked. We're here today. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It just kind of took me on a journey that I still haven't hopped off yet. That's kind of where I'm at.
So I'm going to kind of dive right into the first question, because you kind of partly answered it, but I'm going to just continue on with it. So did it begin when you were a young kid? Is that where it all began? Or, I mean, of course, you don't know as a young child, right? Like, you don't know that this is your path or whatever it is. But like, was that the interest, or is that where it began?
In natural dyes, no, actually. So I was always interested in art as a young child. As a child, I like loved making and drawing. And I think I was blessed with a very like, like accepting family that really like nurtured my like kooky kind of like little kid creative side. So that was maybe where like my interest in like that kind of work came from. But I didn't find natural dyes actually until college. So I studied textile design at the Chelsea College of Art and Design in London. And we basically like, I also like to have my hand in 1,000 cookie jars at once. I don't really like, you know, finding like one thing and doing it. And that's actually like a gift of natural dyes, is you can set your pots up and run around and do other things in the meantime and let things wait. So it really kind of satisfies maybe what now I'm learning might be adult ADHD. You know, for me, it's like, it's great. I'm like, this is awesome. I'm like doing a bunch of things, but then I'm also meditating at the same time. All of the best. Crazy. But so I found my pathway in college. I was studying in London, you know, sustainability in the fashion marketplace was a really big buzzword and like term that everyone was throwing around. And there was a lot of like really amazing theoretical work being done in sustainability, but I still felt like going into fashion was just inherently toxic. So I was very like torn. I didn't really know what to do. I think toxic, not only from a physical standpoint, like it creates poison, right? But then also from like a spiritual mental standpoint, I was just finding myself like working at all these companies who are wonderful, but then at the same time, it was like you were expected to work 14-hour days. And I was like, my body was breaking down and I was partying too much. And I was like, this is not it. This is not it. You know, I had like, you know, it's like if what, and also it's like, it's clothes. I was like, why am I killing myself over a garment? Like, this is not, I was like, I can't, I just couldn't, wasn't really sitting with me correctly.
What year was this?
This was in 2000 and, oh my God, this is a great, okay, so this is my thesis year, 2011.
Okay.
Maybe the seed was planted in about 2010. Mm-hmm. A wonderful woman came and taught onion skin dyeing at my college. And I said, oh. I was like, this is cool. This is weird. And then I came home and I was interning at a jewelry company and her best friend dyed all of the garments. And I was like, you know, it's like you just start seeing it everywhere. And then I like wandered into a bookstore and I found India Flint's book, Eco Color. And I just was like, okay, I hear you, whatever you are.
Speaking to you.
Yeah, you're just, something's like making like, I believe in goosebumps, like my body when it like something's in the right place. My right arm specifically, it's so bizarre, just gets goosebumps. And I just got my God. It's so, it's like, woo. But yeah, and then that was it. And I went back to my, I like for my thesis year, I just like London is a really special place for creativity. I think like I was really given carte blanche to kind of do whatever I wanted, which was really special. Cause I think if I had stayed in New York and gone to school, I don't know if that creativity would have been nurtured at another college. Like in a good way, they really train you for business, right? Like I did not learn how to write an invoice until I graduated, but like, I think I was really gifted the gift of learning how to research, learning how to put my thoughts together to really like look at a specific artistic practice from every angle. And that was such a gift. So I just dove into the world of natural dyes. I was talking to stores. I was trying to like get people's garbage to do the dyeing. It was like very like scrappy, for lack of a better word. But the show did well. And then I started, you know, as we started just getting into it, like I just kept telling people what I was doing. Like, for, I don't know what happened. I just started chatting because I talked too much and people were like, cool. Can you do it for me? And then a friend of mine was asked if I could, you know, just dye some t-shirts for her vintage store. And then she gave me a little space in her basement. And then someone else bought them. And then I taught a class. And now 12 years later, I'm sitting talking to you on a podcast. And it was just like this avalanche of opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. That's why I say that it picked me, because it's, you know, every time I feel like I want to throw in the towel, another job comes.
So did you start right up with clothing, or what was it? What was the first project that you had?
That's a great question. I would say that the first like canvas was clothing. I think I kind of understood that in order for this to become a viable business, I kind of had to have a product. So I needed to support myself. So I was like trying to figure out scrappily ways to make that happen. So yes, I started dyeing clothing for other people and I would just do little projects and, you know, worked odd jobs at the time. I was like a press manager for other people. I love storytelling. So like crafting other people's creative identities is really fun for me. So I like did that. And I did a little bit of, you know, just whatever it took until it finally kind of became something that I could, you know, I could sustain my own life with. And then I actually worked with, I'm actually pivoting my practice back more into this, but I created a large textile installation for the Textile Art Center here in Brooklyn. And so So I kind of have always had this more fine art, kooky, weird practice that I like keep a little bit more private and on the side. And now I'm actually moving away from fashion and more into that world.
Ooh, tell us more about that world. I actually wanted to understand a little bit more about your childhood, but we'll get to that next.
Oh, we'll go back about this. Early childhood trauma later. I think like I've had this desire to move on to like a more sculptural form and kind of like work with the materials in a way that feels more intuitive and less on the body. Like I think that making clothing is wonderful as well, but at the same time, natural dyes can't be scaled to the degree that would I can do it alone. And in New York City specifically, it's very, it's tough on a young artist.
Yeah.
So I think from like a burnout body perspective, I can't actually do all of the work by myself. So I'm working now with another company that does natural dyes called Botanical Colors. They're incredible. Don't know why we haven't done this before. They have a much bigger operation. They sell natural dyes. They're the coolest people on the planet, Kathy Hattori and Amy Dufault. And they are growing a massive dye house. So I'm actually putting all of my dye production to them, helping them facilitate that so I can work on my own fine art practice on the side in my own free time. And then, you know, their dyers who are really skilled and seasoned and masters can do the physical work and I'll help them with the creative side. And then my smaller practice can kind of stay small, you know, because I think there's something that I became a factory.
Yeah.
And I loved that. And it was really an amazing opportunity to be able to see how, what that looks like. But there was a little bit of joy that got lost for me personally, like on the way when I'm like physically shoving 400 t-shirts into a washing machine, which is like awesome and incredible. But I think I also, you know, like I'm 34 now. I started like thinking into the future. I, you know, my thought process is like, I'd love a family. I'd love a 13-month-old myself. And I don't know if I'm physically going to be capable to do the marketing, the dyeing, the but you know, when you get older, you realize you can't wear all the hats. You need to start delegating.
Did you ever think of setting up your own, like, I know you have your own studio, but like having your own team to do all of that work? Did you ever think of it like that?
Definitely. Yeah. I had an amazing, incredible assistant last year, Erin. She was like phenomenal. So I've worked with people before, but there's just something in my orbit. I don't know what's going on right now that's telling me to like pull back and reset. And I think sometimes it's important to give yourself those like years even to kind of have that space to kind of just take in instead of output. And that's kind of where I'm at right now. So it's like a new, it's still kind of like evolving and emerging and I'm like figuring out what that looks like. You know, is it natural dyes and the healing arts? Is it me figuring out my painting practice? Am I like, you know, what's the next step on the journey? But I think right now I'm kind of letting the universe like give me the inspiration
and those signs.
Yeah, because you know, if we think about it, it's been 12 years. So it has to change. The universe is gonna change it for me if I don't change it myself. That's just how it works. That's what I believe. It's like every 7 years, shit's like, you're done.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to the Ikivi podcast. If you enjoyed listening to our podcast, do consider supporting us by visiting www.ikivi.com. That is IKKIVI.com. We are a small, sustainable business supporting contemporary Indian brands. Our platform is run by an all-women team handpicking the most beautiful, ethically made clothes and accessories from across the country all in one place. Our podcast is self-funded and will always be free to listen to. You supporting our work would mean a lot to us. Thank you for being here and let's get back to our episode.
tell us, now I'm on a different path, but let's go back a little bit, because I think that kind of will give us an understanding of you as a child and what, I mean, as an artist, it's very, very interesting to understand what you were like as a child. Like, was art a part of your life? Was how did you interact with art or your creativity when you were a child?
It was a massive part of my life. I think, you know, I definitely was a very kooky little kid. my parents are split, but I have my beautiful little sister entered my life when I was 10. So I kind of had like a 10 years of kind of being like an only child who I had a ton of friends, but I had a lot of alone time, a lot of like insular creative play and like talking with like whatever the hell you talked to when you were a little kid. But like, so I definitely was really allowed to experiment, which is actually like a huge part of my workshops that I teach now, because I think that that kind of like creative play is so important, honestly, especially for adults as well now, because I think that that fruitful kind of like experimenting zone for children is like really necessary for you to kind of like form your own kind of like universe or like world, really, and test things out and make mistakes and it'd be okay. And I went to art school kind of my whole life. So like I went to high school for art as well. There's a high school in New York City called LaGuardia. I didn't get in the first time. I had to reapply. If you don't succeed, try again. That's also like a big through line in my life. I, for some reason, am one of those people who just takes the long road.
Yeah.
Like, without meaning to, I just like, it's just the way that I get things done. It's like, I need to be like, ow, and then like, oh, okay. And then like go back around. it's just my story. I'm like, I'm okay with it now. It's fine. But, so I went to high school for art. I went to college for art. I just like, it's always been a part of my life. My dad's mother was a painter. So I think that that definitely helped, like affected me when I was younger. It was really like fun to paint with her and watch her paint. And my mom's parents were both musicians, which I did not get any by the way. Like, I'm hoping the future generation, I hope it skipped one, because like my mom sings like an opera singer, my uncle can play the track, like tone deaf. I'm super fun at karaoke, but like because I'm bad, it's like not, I don't, it's
yeah,
really. Like my grandpa's like one of those people who could like pick up an instrument he's never seen before and just like
play.
So special. I think he like taught Mickey Hart from the Grateful Dead drums in high school or something. It's like one of the family stories, you know what I mean? It's like everyone's like, oh, it's Grandpa Mickey Hart. so creativity, I think, was like really around me. And like when you grow up in New York City, it's everywhere. So it's like you are steeped in it. Like I grew up like on the periphery of Alphabet City. So not in Alphabet, but like that's where I would like sneak into, where I was like, okay. You know what I mean? I would run away. I was like bad. I was a little bad, but it's fine. And you know, like all of my friends were artists and my friends' parents were artists. So you really get immersed in this culture of people who kind of world make in a way that maybe is not super normal.
That's interesting. Can you tell us a little bit more about living in New York City and kind of growing up amongst all of that?
New York City's, it's funny because New Yorkers are the worst when we travel. Like, it's like you think that you just have this like cool card or something like that. You're like, everyone's like, oh, where are you from? You're like, oh, I'm from New York. It's not the city, you know what I mean? But yeah, it's special in the sense that I really do believe that there is a certain group or space for everybody. Like, you, everyone can find their quirk here. There is no, if you are bored in New York, you're doing something wrong because you're not walking outside. You know what I mean? There's art galleries. There's it's almost too much sometimes. It can be really overstimulating. And I think, like, growing up there as a child, I think I maybe had a little bit of this, like, really intense drive to, like, be successful or famous at, like, a very, very, very young age, which I think is a little bit cuckoo. Like, it's just not, like, luckily going to London kind of made me realize you didn't have to be, like, a top executive by the time you're 20 years old. Like, I had never heard the concept of a gap year. I think it's also, like, a very American.
Yeah.
Is this, like, need to, like, get everything done and out of the way, like, extremely quickly. And, like, New York has that kind of energy where it's just, like, we are just moving.
Go, go, go. Yeah.
Going. And I don't even know that I'm doing it half the time. So I think it, on one hand, it's really exciting because you're just kind of buzzing with all of this, like, really fertile creative energy all the time. But if you don't give yourself that space to rest, and, like, tell people that you don't need to go out to dinner or, like, have that kind of, like, you know, alone time, it can get a little bit overwhelming sometimes.
Yeah.
But that's, like, yeah, my house has, like, lots of plants in it. I need to be able to, like, tune out and, like, pull away and then, you know, jump back into the hum.
Yeah, you were saying a little earlier about how even as adults we need to kind of take some time to be creative. What are some of your suggestions in ways that we can actually do it? Because we're not all very creative, and we're so, like, analytical, or we're organized, and we don't give ourselves enough room to be creative. What are some of the ways you think we can actually let our juices flow?
So I disagree with you. I think everyone is creative. And I think that it is that framework, that analytical, like, have to get things right, has to look perfect, like, in the box kind of thing that we've all been programmed for, that, like, holds that back. I think there's a lot of different ways you can do it. I think, you know, like, in my workshops, it's funny, I give people, like, small amounts of, like, for my painting workshop, right? I have a workshop literally called, like, illustrative playtime. And I only give people a little bit of dye to begin with, because I want to let them just, for lack of a better term, fuck it up. Like, I want them. And I think it's permission. Honestly, I think you have to give yourself permission, number one. Mm. And that's the main thing, is I start every workshop with, I'm like, I am not here to grade you. You paid for this. Remember that. Like, remember that. You paid for this class. I'm not here to grade you. I don't give a shit what it looks like.
Yeah, yeah.
I want you to tear it up. And then, honestly, there's this, like, beautiful moment, like, probably 20 minutes into the workshop, where everyone's just like, whoa! And they're, like, making all these crazy, like, things that I've never even dreamed of making before. People are handing their friends paintbrushes and sponges, and, like, it's awesome. Like, it's a mess. And yeah. You have to give yourself permission to make a mess. I think that's step number one, is it's, like, the final outcome also doesn't need to have to go on your wall. It doesn't need to, you know, you don't need to make money from it. So I think, you know, sometimes if you're maybe financially constrained and you don't want to make a mess, or you don't, you know, just start with, like, free writing. Just start with getting your brain down on a piece of paper and committing to a practice. I think that's super important. I think understanding that 75% of creativity might be trash is also important as well. Because it's, you need to, like, compost it. You need to, like, test things out. You need to be able to throw things into the fire and, like, watch it transform into another space. This is a really silly person. Actually, I don't think it's silly. I actually think he's amazing, but Rick Rubin is so cool. Like, have you read his new book?
No, I haven't.
Fascinating. But it's just, it's simple. And like one of the things he says, which I think is really important, and I'm going to butcher this, so we might want to like go back. But it's basically, I think also like, as and this goes back to like the New Yorker thing, is we kind of have this idea that we need to like have this original idea.
Mm.
And I think that, and one of the things that he says is no ideas are original. It's just like you downloaded it. So if that idea wasn't meant to happen, it's going to happen through someone else if it was supposed to happen. And that to me is so beautiful because it takes a lot of me out of it. I think when you can try and take a little bit of space away from the outcome of what you're making or like the ego of what you're making and you just go, it's always when I find that the work is the best for me personally, you know, but that's the way that I work. Like I need to let things emerge because I find that my first filter of like a creative project is usually going to be wrong. Cause it's coming from a place of like needing validation or affirmation or like, you know, just trying to fit a square peg in a round hole. Whereas like when you can kind of just like get like work through it to get rid of that, that's when like the work starts coming out.
Yeah. Probably. I think we're a society, we're just told that everything needs to make money. Our time needs to be spent in such a way that it translates into something else. Like all our hobbies, like if we're good, a little, like maybe, you know, slightly good with some particular thing, like, oh, how can we make money out of it? Like, how can we translate it to social media and kind of, you know, get people to talk to us about it? That's so interesting because it's there. That voice is there all the time. How do you get rid of that?
You know, it's so hard. It's so interesting. This is something I struggle with every day because I think that it's about finding a balance within capitalism because there's this also really negative thought process that goes on the other side of the binary, right? Like I'm going to get a little bit like woo with it, but I think that especially as like female identifying humans, you have to break both binaries of like what comes to the other side of like capitalism is bad because then we don't care for ourselves. Then we don't advocate for ourselves with the money that we actually need to be making, right? Like I'm actually pro making dollars big time on your artwork as well. So I think it's funny because it's like, but I don't think you need to squeeze every dollar out of every creative idea that you have. And I think it's about finding a balance between what is your practice and it's tough though, right? It's really, really hard. But I think it's about finding a balance between that. And it happens to artisans and craftspeople who are really highly skilled labor workers, right? They're not the ones who are getting top dollar because our system's inverted. The people who had the idea, who are attached to the advertisers, who are attached to who gets our attention are the ones who are making the money, which is tough. But knowing that and then knowing that you can kind of shift your practice in a way that like maybe sustains you to make money is fine. That's the thing. I don't like it when, I hope I'm making sense, when a designer kind of gets poo-pooed for making money on their artwork. And then that bastardizes the artwork.
Yeah.
Why is that?
Yeah.
It's tough, right? Because it's like, I think it's, but you just have to push through that, you know? Do I think that everyone and their mother needs to have a naturally dyed scarf brand? No. No, I don't think so either, though.
Yeah.
I do agree with you. And I think there's something that like I struggle with a lot with the world of natural dyes and social media and like working like, you know, Instagram. And I have a very like, you know, I help people with their Instagrams, but then I also have this, and you know, you need to make reels, you need to make videos, you need to make content. But the paradox is that natural dyes are supposed to be inherently really, really slow and timely and considered. So I think it confuses people when you see a 1 minute clip of someone dyeing something that they think. Do you know what I mean? And I'm guilty. I posted those videos because I need to like make money. But then it's also like, I have to put on a disclaimer that I'm like, no, this is not going to take 20 seconds for you to do this. It's a slow process that actually takes 3 days. You know, so it's hard. It's hard to kind of find the balance in that framework. And that's one of the reasons why I'm still kind of like about TikTok. Sorry, TikTok. But I don't think I can do it. I got one platform and I'm like,
yeah, yeah. No, tell us about this. That's interesting. This obviously requires a lot of like introspection and understanding yourself and, you know, kind of diving a little deeper to find that balance. And you have clearly understood yourself and found that balance for yourself. Tell us about this, like, extremely fast-paced side of your brain and also the extremely creative, slow, introspective side of you.
This is the battle I literally struggle with every single fucking day.
Tell us about it.
Full transparency, gloves are off. I think, like, you know, it's so interesting. I think my life is kind of, my life's mission maybe is like an exercise in patience. Because inherently, I'm not. You know, that is the New Yorker in me. It's yeah. Like, I love to go. I love to be busy. I love to see 1,000 friends. And, you know, it's almost like love to consume. Let's be honest. It's like I have like consuming art and culture and whatever. But then like the higher self in me, the one that meditates, the one that eats healthily, you know, it's just a balance. I think it's like knowing. I think we also put a lot of shame on ourselves for like being that way, if that makes sense. And I think that trying to remove that and kind of just understand it and work with it feels a little bit more like skillful, for lack of a better word, and like know that you can't really like always struggle with perfectionism in the way that it's like, this is going to sound so crazy, but it's like, sometimes I'll have that problem where it's like, if I'm not going to be amazing at it, I'm not going to do it. That's crazy. Yeah. You know what I mean? But that's like the first thought, right? So it's like, okay, but maybe if I just work through that and I'm like, it's okay, I can make a mistake, I can mess up, it's fine. You know? Yeah. I think it goes back to like the permission conversation of just kind of being gentle with yourself enough to understand that when you put something out in the world, it's not always like concrete. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes that stops people from starting is they feel like anything they put out is going to be like the last thing that was ever seen of them on the planet. And it's like, nothing is like that, really. And like the work that I made, like, oh my God, in college was so bad. I am so happy that like I was not on social media. Truly, truly comically terrible. And it's fun to like look back on it now. It's like, you know, I think you have to kind of have this, if you can't like laugh at yourself and your ego, I feel like it's like that's when you start getting into trouble.
Yeah, yeah. That's very hard though. Very hard. Yeah.
Very hard. Yeah, not easy. Therapy is great. It's really doing wonders.
Yeah. Okay, so can you tell us a little bit about your signature style? Now that we've kind of understood your brain a little bit, tell us a little bit about your art form and your style.
Yeah, it's funny because I think I don't know how to describe it. That's a great question. I feel like it was funny. And a journalist once said that I was like called my prints like haphazard. And I really like that. I was like, I can't tell if this is a dig, but I'm into it.
I'll own it.
Yeah, I was like, I'm gonna own that one. Thank you. I think that there is, yeah, okay, let's try and like, what would I say, like in a synthesized, like, little like artist statement here. I feel like for me, have you ever seen like the Chaos Matrix?
Yeah.
I think I run chaos good. I think that might be where I am in the spectrum. So I think like my work takes on kind of this like, I feel like it's almost, maybe this is a little bit like too esoteric, but I feel like my practice is like a container for chaos in kind of like a spiritual realm. You know, I think, you know, working with chance is a huge part of my practice, and creating work that I think kind of speaks to like, call it the universe, higher power, whatever, you know, I don't know what it is, inner resource, I've heard people say, is it's kind of like my conversation with that. And I think that aesthetically, the way that that just comes out looks a little bit chaotic for some reason. And, you know, I'd say my color palette, comically preferentially, is a little bit more neutral, but when I'm working with my clients, it's kind of just a rainbow. It runs the gamut. I think I've actually like shocked myself about how much color I can actually produce and how wild my patterns can get. Like, I don't really know where it comes from because I'm not someone who really like wears a lot of color. My house doesn't really have that much, besides my painting I'm working on in the background. I don't really have that much color around me. Which is interesting. I think it's like that thing of like the designer who wears the same uniform every day. It's like, I actually can't look at that much color anymore because I need the space around me to be blank so that when it comes out, it kind of just is what it is. And then I send it.
What does color mean to you?
It's a good question. I think color for me, the word that just keeps popping into my head is sacred. I think it's the way that it fascinates me. I think the way that color inherently is spoken about, actually like in terms that relate to sound, I think is fascinating. The fact that we are... color is like a phenomenon that humans kind of perceive, I think, is a really interesting thing. I think I was reading a science article that the color purple, not the violet light spectrum, but the color purple is inherently a human phenomenon. And that to me is fascinating. So, yeah. You know, the fact that our eyeballs can refract light in this way that just stains everything. And then the fact that like opacity is kind of a made up thing. It's just all these atoms reconstructing to give us this like art practice is fascinating to me. So, you know, the fact that I've made my practice based on color. Yeah. It's kind of like my communication with what I perceive as like divinity is colorful.
Tell us about your spirituality side, because it seems to kind of flow into every answer that you have. Is it something that you've always had going for you in terms of, has it been a part of your life for a long time? Is it, or to what extent are you spiritual?
Yeah, it's funny because I think the answer is inherently yes. But I don't think I really understood how to define it. Like, I wouldn't say that I'm a particularly religious person or like have a defined religion in any way, shape, or form. I was raised like Italian Catholic, but that scared me. I was like, why is he bleeding? Like, what's going on here? This doesn't seem great. I'm not really like, love the song. I was like, my bag. But yeah, I think I've kind of always been a seeker in that way. Mm-hmm. And have, you know, I think like through a lot of my like own healing practices and like journeys in that kind of realm, you know, I like having my hand in all the cookie jars. I'm like, I will try any healing modality someone throws at me. I'm like, you want to rub me with crystal? Sick. Into what now? Like, wonderful, you know? Like,
yeah.
But like having a little bit of lightheartedness about it. And I think like for me, what I'm starting to realize more now is that my brain kind of inherently is really good at going into fantasy land. So like the spiritual world for me is actually about getting comfortable with like the mundane. It's like, how can Kara live on a schedule? How can she, you know, wake up in the morning and have a routine? Because I think I always thought that being an artist, it was like, you rebellion, like whatever. And I'm like, I love giving myself a 9-to-5 now.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that kind of structure has become kind of part of my practice as well. And that kind of, space to give myself space, I think, is a huge part of my
I think I'm very similar to you in terms of your journey and your experience or your interaction with spirituality. I'm not religious as well, but like I find it very interesting, like you said, like with rub crystals on your face. I think that there's obviously something there. Like, what is it? I mean, I'm not gonna do it just to like be successful in life or whatever, but there's no harm in trying it out. Like, what about it makes sense? Like, why are there so many people talking about crystals, since we're talking about crystals, right? I mean, I don't know anything at this point, but it's interesting. It's very interesting.
Yeah. And I think it's more of the, I think like our society has kind of like stripped us away from like ritual. And I think like having ritual as a practice and like, you know, the crystal's kind of just like an avatar for you to put your thing on, you want to pray to a, like, I don't even know. I have my iPhone kit, like whatever. It doesn't matter. But I think it's also about giving you space to take yourself out of yourself for a minute, you know?
It's
like, we're so, like our society is like so obsessed with like self-help, self-improvement, me. But like, what about, it's like the second you can like flip that and be like, well, what can I do for you?
Yeah.
What's the other? How can I help the other person? So it's like having that space to reflect and kind of take yourself out of yourself, I think is part of the process that really helps me.
So feel like just using these practices to kind of just pull yourself out of it and see yourself visually as just this person and not take ourselves too seriously. I feel like there are a lot of times we put so much importance on so many things and take things so seriously that you just forget the essence of life, so to speak, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Because I think those lessons are going to hit you whether you like it or not.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, moving back to the art form.
We went there. We did it again.
Yeah. Oh, well, it's going to happen again, I'm sure. But tell us about what kind of projects you take up and how, what is sustainability and eco, and how does eco-friendliness kind of seep into the work that you do or the projects that you choose, and how does that work for you?
I think that's a great question. I'm super of the school that, you know, perfection is the enemy of the good. And I think that the word sustainability gets thrown around a lot in fashion when inherently, like, it's a really impossible thing to achieve under capitalism. Yeah. So when I'm working on my projects with my clients, you know, I was operating as a small scale natural dye studio. So inherently, because I'm naturally dyeing their products, it's going to be more sustainable than something that is synthetically dyed with like a toxic chemical that has metallic binders on it, that when you wash it into like our ecosystems, it pollutes our water. So, you know, all of my materials that I work with can completely be disposed into like municipal water systems and it doesn't affect them. You know, a lot of them are also good for composting and soil health. And, you know, it's a holistic process in that way. But something that I think people do also forget with natural dyes and sustainability is that it requires a lot of water. And that is a very precious, precious commodity and resource. So that's something you do really have to be mindful of when you're working on these larger scale projects is, it, are you monitoring your water use in a sustainable way too? So it's just something else to kind of consider and think about, where it's like, is a company like Nike, for example, maybe shouldn't naturally dye an entire collection of clothing, because natural dyes also are, you know, they come from plants, right? We don't want to extract more than we can actually give back. So, so these are all things to be mindful of. I don't actually think the natural dye should be scaled to a level of fast fashion, because that's like putting on a Band-Aid on a dam that's about to break, you know? And it's causing, it almost could cause another more problems than good. It's like applying this holistic, beautiful thing that's supposed to be small and local and spread out and, you know, diverse to like the homogenization. Yeah. You know, you get where I'm going with this, but yeah. So with my projects, it's like, I'm discerning with my clients to the sense that I'm excited when someone wants to have something naturally dyed. So we typically just work in a way that helps like a small portion of their collection. And I just act as a dye house. So it's like, if you're a company and you want to dye stuff, we'll do it. That's pretty much it, because we're just excited to be able to get the word out about the natural dyes and what they can do on the scale. Cause I think when people wear clothing that is naturally dyed, I don't know, it's just like, it feels good to me.
Yeah, I agree. How do you feel? So you said, I mean, it can't be at the scale of fast fashion. How do we scale sustainability? How do we kind of reach more people?
I think my first answer is education. I think empowering people to, and this is why I teach, and I teach online, because I think empowering people to do this practice at the scale that works for them in their own home, I think is step one. Because it starts changing people's ideas about how to consume also as well. And like, when you naturally dye something, I would hope that you treat it with reverence, because you understand how much work it took to make it. So, and I think then the second answer is we stop scaling, period.
Yeah.
I think that's it. I think there is no scaling. I think we need to redefine what that means and like how it's really toxic to do that laterally. Like, it doesn't make sense to scale it the way that we do right now. So with natural dyes, I think working with waste is a really exciting thing. I think there's a lot of companies that are working with like taking agricultural waste, which is something that won't go away, right, anytime soon. But yeah, how can we work with the systems that are already in place to kind of intercept them and then move them into something more sustainable? And that's like a logistical systems thinking, right? So for example, you could take all the waste from like a rosemary farm. This is not scientifically that I'm saying this. Ended up, extract it, make it, that could be applied to scale, because that's already something that's being scaled. There's a process for it, you know. But if you're just farming an entire, go where the abundance is, I think is my answer, right? Like, what are the plants that propagate, and my brain just turned up. Do you know what I'm trying to say?
Oh yeah. My God.
But basically like that just, and are regenerative.
Yeah.
That's where you have to, that's the kind of work you have to do with. But I think the waste aspect of things is also really interesting angle for natural dyes, because you could really work to scale in that way, because so much waste is produced. So that's like dye flowers post events. That's working just within your own composting systems at home. That's like working with big ag to figure out what those solutions look like. And there's it's starting to happen. So I think we're going to see some more like scientific advancements in that field soon, hopefully, fingers crossed.
Yeah. No, it's exciting. I feel like natural dyeing, apart from all of the processes and, you know, the regenerative nature.
I can't say it either. I don't know why. It's the one where it just kills me every time.
It isn't coming. But it's so beautiful as well. Like visually to the eyes, it's just like stunning. And I feel like a lot more people need to see more of it. And that's exciting.
Totally. I agree with you. And I think, you know, we're attracted to beauty and that's not a problem. So I think it's like, if something's not beautiful, people aren't going to buy it. Also.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's important to like lean into the fact that it's just like, it speaks to us.
Yeah. My last question to you, because we've really gone over time. No. I mean, I enjoyed this conversation so much. It kind of went in so many different ways, but it was so fun to kind of understand you as a person and as an artist. But my last question to you is about your next project. What do you have exciting coming up that we can all kind of look out for?
That's a good question.
If you do, I mean, even if you don't, that's completely fine. Like, why is there pressure to have something big?
There's a pressure. My brain is just like, I was like, which one do I talk about? I think like right now, what I'm really excited about is I am actually rebranding away from my name. So I'm going to be rebranding under the name Calyx, which was the name of an old Intimates label that I used to have, but it's going to be Calyx Studio. So I think sometime around September, I'll be relaunching and rebranding and acting more as like a creative studio that takes on like one of a kind projects and kind of like we were saying before, like I'm going to be removing myself from it. So it's something that can actually grow because the calyx is the part of the flower that holds it all together. And I really do believe in like that community building. And I want to create something that if I leave, it's going to still
run.
Continue without me. Yeah. So that's the next exciting chapter for me is I guess like the new do.
That's exciting.
I'm excited. Yeah. So fingers crossed it'll all be done by September, but that, you know.
Yeah.
Back
that's
to school.
Exciting. Yeah. No, I mean, that'll be so fun to kind of create and put together. And since you like the brand building and the creative aspect of that would be really fun to kind of put together. I'm always excited about like growing something and putting something together, so that sounds so fun.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm already liking the way that it's all looking and coming together, and I'm very happy about it, so I think we'll send it off into the universe.
Nice. Well, thank you so much for having this conversation with me. I absolutely enjoyed myself. I didn't know what to expect coming to this conversation, but I had so much fun.
If you enjoyed this conversation, don't forget to subscribe to the Ikivi podcast, a space for discussion on living meaningful and fuller lives each day. The Ikivi podcast is a property edited and produced by the team at Ikivi. Thank you.